my attention. Before I fall off the edge.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good morning, everyone.
I think we'll get started. My name's Christopher Louie, Director of Growth for Gulag in North America. So this next panel will be focusing on the concepts of user acquisition and taking a group of members active and turn them into active and engaged members. So really, we'll start the conversation with, I think, focusing on the top end of the funnel, if you want to call it that. So user acquisition strategies and experiences from our panelists here. And then we'll dig a bit deeper into the engagement and the loyalty side of things. So how do we take a large group of acquired users and turning them into active, engaged, revenue-generating members? Because, you know, as we know, it's great to have a large base of users, but unless you are turning them into weekly, monthly, yearly paying members, you've really spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of marketing dollars on a flashy email list. So I think this panel is relevant to all of us here. User acquisition and engagement is core for any business model, regardless of the geography that you come from, regardless of the type of mobility service that you deploy. So again, as Greg had mentioned before, and as we had in the last session, really the goal here is for it to be as engaging as possible. So do jump in with your questions. Do jump in with your experiences. If you have input on a specific question that we're throwing out to our panelists here, we'd love to hear it. So we'll have about 45 minutes of a discussion, about 15 minutes of a structured Q&A at the end if you do choose to save your questions till the end. With that, I'd say we can get moving. The best way to start, I would say, is to make sure that everyone's familiar with our panelists here. So if we can just go down the line, maybe introduce ourselves, introduce the mobility service that you work for, and then we'll get started. I have some questions here to kind of keep the conversation going along, should we need them. Care to start?
So good morning, everybody, and thanks so much for this opportunity. I incredibly enjoyed already the first hour or 2 hours, very, very excited. So thanks again, it's really great to be here, and I'm just trying to return at least some of the learnings that I have already received. We are based in Budapest with 500 cars. We are 100% owned by the biggest oil company in Hungary. And so that's a very strong, in some way that is extremely strong brand. It's the biggest and most well-known oil brand in Hungary, so every single person knows MOL. They have the highest density of gas stations in the country, but it's also not a very sexy brand. It's a well-known brand, it's a popular brand, it's very strong, but it's not particularly attractive brand. And so one of the reasons why they created us is to improve their brand and a little bit do a greenwashing, but now they see that now actually it looks like it's working, so there's more to this business than just to do advertising. And so we are based in Budapest, 500 cars, 70% gas cars and 30% electric. Most of the cars are small, so Kia Picanto, Volkswagen app size, and free floating. And sorry, I forgot to say, I'm the CEO, and I started a year ago, and I'm here with Adam over there, who is our new product developer, just joined 1 month ago.
Thanks for that. As we say in New Zealand, kia ora, which is hello. My name is Eric. I'm the CEO of Mevo. We've got Finn back there as well, who's a founder and head of product. Free floating predominantly three of New Zealand's four largest cities. So Auckland and Wellington free floating. Hamilton is our experiment with back to base as well, all in the same app. Launched 2016 and just been growing with three cars and growing ever since then. Lots of experimenting. We just basically the whole company is an experiment. We're always learning. Focusing quite a bit at the moment on B2B as well as B2C. Yeah, that's that's a good start. A few EVs in there as well. But one of the key things we did from the start is launch carbon, what we say climate positive, which is technically carbon negative. But when you're saying that to people, you know, carbon doesn't make you feel great, and negative certainly doesn't either. So that means we do full life cycle analysis. So everything from the cars being built, shipped, on-road emissions as well, and end of life. And we do that at 120 to 200%. So working with permanent rainforest credits in country. So every trip actually is leaving the climate better than before it started, which is a pretty cool thing to be doing. We like it. Wonderful to be here with all of you as well. Really learning a lot.
So, good morning everyone. I'm Raul Guidez from Weibel. I'm the technology and marketing manager in there. And well, we have two more people here today, Raquel and Paloma from product and operations. And Weibel is a company launched in 2018 from two big companies here, and Repsol. Repsol is the oil company in Spain. It's a huge company. And maybe the goal is not so clear at the end, because it's like experimenting, especially from the Kia side. And the oil company, you know, this this branding move, and also trying to be in there in these mobility changes, not only regarding how I give the energy to the movement, but also creating the movement itself. And this is why Repsol is going there. We have at Weibel in Madrid 500 cars, 500 Kia Niro, PHEV, not EV, and we are growing since then, and hoping to find this sustainability regarding the business, right? Trying to earn the profitability in the company. We are working on that, and we're discussing this now.
Awesome. Well, I'm very excited that we have two of the oil and gas giants here on the stage with us. Shows how far we've come, right? Awesome. So I would say to start off, probably makes sense to start at the beginning. So again, using the concept of starting with from a user acquisition perspective, be interesting to know in the early days, let's call it the first months of your service launch, what were some key user acquisition strategies that were really impactful for you? And Eric, I will be excited for yours when you have three vehicles on the streets. But maybe if you'd like to start, and we'll go down the line again.
When the business started 4 years ago, I wasn't there, but the car fleet strategy was very much acquisition focused and not efficiency focused. So a lot of the models were not the rational choices, by the kind of cars that are attracting customers. So for the Hungarian market, a normal choice would be a Kia Picanto or a Opel Astra or Toyota Corolla or Ford Focus. These are the cars that normal people drive. But the company started with Mercedes CLA and Mercedes A-Class and Volkswagen E-App, electric smart for 2 and electric smart for 4. Very expensive cars, very new cars, and very, very difficult to make it profitable. But it worked as a customer acquisition. So a lot of people signed up to actually test these cars. And once you have the customer signed up, then you know, then we have an opportunity to keep them. And this is the transition that we're going through right now. You're getting rid of these unprofitable cars and bringing in the more rational choices that we can make profit on.
So you're taking an existing base of users and pushing them into more a cost-efficient.
And to be honest, the second approach to acquisition is because of we have this very, very strong brand presence to start with. It 6 months after we launched, it was a national brand, more because it was so easily associated with the already existing very, very strong brand. It was a huge advantage to start. And so basically our approach is that because we are in these lucky situations, we have customers downloading and registering constantly. Even 4.5 years after we started, we still have a very, very strong current of new customer registrations every week, every month. So our approach to acquisition, don't mess it up. So the customer comes in, and just remove the hurdles. You know, recognize why they never register but never do the first trip, and recognize why they do one trip and then they stop, and just remove the hurdles. Just don't mess it up, basically. And recognizing why we have service defects and service failures. So that's our acquisition strategy.
And you mentioned, obviously, coming from an existing brand, mall, you have point of sale, right?
It's incredibly helpful. It's incredibly helpful.
So are you able to lean on those existing, because they have gas stations through Budapest, and are you able to lean on those at all?
The physical point of sales, I don't think that's particularly helpful, but just the brand awareness, that people know the name, so when they need to think about. So we don't, there is a share now, Hungary is our competitor, and we have the same number of cars, but when you measure the brand awareness, we have much higher brand awareness.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially associated pulling down from the parent
and
brand.
And that's saving a lot of money on acquisition costs.
We looked really closely at, you know, sign of time. I don't know how firms are doing it. You know, my personal testing sometimes is 2 weeks to sign up to some of the other competitors in the market. You know, we find a direct correlation between the speed at which we can get someone into, like, approved and then into the car to the value, lifetime value of that customer in time. That's, you know, that's pretty huge for us. The other one I'd say is working out how to create as much value for that user throughout the different parts of their life. So both you know, getting around to work and making that seamless for them to use us as a work mobility solution, as well as during their day-to-day life. And then we've taken a different approach to, I think, the more historic approach in car sharing, which is particularly free-floating. The shorter journey, we're much more focused on the mid-journey market. So, you know, in Auckland, our median trip time is hour 16, compared to, I know, Calgary used to be, I think 12 minutes was the median trip time when CarGo was there. So really, really different there.
And was that part of your positioning at launch, you would say, was position it as a car for multiple trip types, or was it really focused on short inner city mobility?
Yeah, at launch, I think it's fair to say we just wanted to see what the users were interested in and experiment, and then figure out from then where that value was and double down.
Follow where the usage is. And
yeah, 100%.
Yep.
The other thing we did at launch is we were working towards on-demand and free-floating. We had back-to-base on-demand, which is kind of the worst of both worlds. I don't recommend it at all. So yeah, once we made that, we saw our cost of acquisition probably drop by tenfold when we went large enough to be free floating. And so that's one of the real hurdles of starting really small.
Yeah, I mean, you need a tipping point for it to be
For
it to be convenient for anyone to use. They need to have access to a vehicle within X minutes, within X.
Exactly.
Meters of distance as well.
Yeah, the other thing I'd say just on the climate positive part, I'd really like it if that wasn't a competitive differentiator for us. I think, you know, in time, every company in every sector should be climate positive. So really happy to talk to anyone about that, about how we did it. There's quite a bit of complexity in it. But once you get it, it works pretty well. And it's a cool story to tell. And I think that should, my one, you know, if I had a magic wand, I'd make climate positive and car sharing just ubiquitous as a standard approach. So,
and we're all early days of a Webull.
Yes. Well, we were when we came to the market, we were the fourth competitor in Madrid. It was like a competitive market. Car2Go, eMove, and Citi. Citi is a Spanish company we don't know. And we were in there, this the company. So at the moment we decided to come to the market, we were trying to differentiate. In some moment we thought that we can, in our head, because then it was not so easy, but we thought we were in a mature market. So we need to differentiate. And then with this Kia Niro PHEV, we tried to talk about longer trips, the range that we have. We also make an extra effort to find off-street parkings in Madrid. You know, Madrid has a lot of density of people in the center of the city, so it's very difficult to find a park in there. So we did this effort to have these off-street parkings. And also, we make up this idea of kind of hubs to let people to park the private car outside of the city and then take a car off us to come to the center. And we did this effort before going to the market, and at the end, after having this service on the street, we realized that we need to be didactical with the customer. We needed to do all these steps like if we were the first competitor in the market. Because these 3 years or 4 years that the Car2Go were in the market, it wasn't enough to let the people learn how it works, the car sharing. Even with that, we had a lot of customer registration the first date, as maybe because of new cars to test, which was a bigger car than the other competitors, and did give us this first date. But at the end, the learn we had is that we need to explain every detail of the service, every detail of the operation, close the car, even being the fourth competitor. We had it then. 2 more competitors in station based in Madrid, and now we are 5 competitors in Madrid, and the 6th is coming in the coming months. So clearly, Madrid is a market. You can do car sharing in there, but this differentiation, trying to find that what the customer can, how the customer is going to open your application the first. This is maybe the first the first thing we think in our company. And now with this is the road we're doing.
Awesome. And I would, to your point of relying on essentially the in market education, right? You had 3 competitors that were already launched beforehand. So kind of dovetailing that into the idea of relying on existing ecosystems to punch above your weight, right? So with limited marketing budgets, especially at in the early days of a mobility service, looking for opportunities, existing networks, groups of users, existing companies that can help bring users to your service. And I think using existing car sharing operators, there's 3 of them in the market. They have tens, hundreds of thousands of users already. You can latch onto that and pull them to your service and bring a differentiator to the table. So on that note, Eric, for example, any examples from New Zealand where you've been able to latch onto existing ecosystems to punch above your weight?
I mean, I think the thing, because we've been going for a while now, one of the key things for us was the education. So actually, other than we had a City Hawk, which was kind of like a Zipcar analog, but to be honest, with worse tech, bless them. So they existed and just really hadn't fired in the market. They'd been around, I think, 7 years when we launched. So we were able to pick up quite a few of their customers quite quickly. Outside of that, though, we've really been teaching the New Zealand market what car sharing is. When micromobility launched, they obviously launched with massive budgets, and micromobility and ride hailing as well. New Zealand tends to be one of their most profitable markets, so they get a proof point internationally, which they can then point their investors at and say, look how much we're making here, which actually provided a lot of education. So it would have been nice if it was the other way around, but I can now say to people in New Zealand, hey, we're think like the scooters, but with cars.
and they get it straight away. And so that's been really helpful. But it's been really interesting post-pandemic getting out and seeing a lot of other operators, because we don't have a deeply competitive car sharing space. So it's really grassroots. This is what car sharing is. This is how you use it. This is,
Yeah, so you're starting from a base of just new mobility in general. The concept of not owning a vehicle, like kick scooters, but apply it to cars.
Yeah, we really see private car ownership or private fleets as our competition more than, say, other car shares.
Yeah. And so I would assume that a lot of your acquisition strategy is, yes, focused around, similar to what Amidus was sharing with, sorry, I lost Amidus, either of you. At launch, a lot of your marketing campaigns were the alternative to Car2Go. We're a larger option. We can fit all your friends. We can fit your gear. So taking that concept from micromobility as well.
Not so much. I mean, in explaining it to people more in ecosystem settings, but look, I'll be honest. We haven't spent any money on marketing in like 2.5 years. So we took a product-led approach. We said, look, it's got to be great. It's got to be something that people come in and genuinely get value from. And if it's not, like, why spend money on marketing, sending people in to something that doesn't work? So we stopped marketing, 2.5 years ago, and now we've got like friend get friend, kind of the $20 credit each way. Outside of that, even that's used, I think, one in 20 of our acquisitions, one in 15 is through that, otherwise it's word of mouth. So it's really about build excellent product.
I can add to that. So one of the ways we think about marketing is also similar. Let's invest that money somehow in our customers and in our service. And the particular kind that I like very much, which is measurable, is when we do special events. So we have these partnerships. There is a musical concert or a festival which is not in our home zone, but we make an arrangement that for that event we go out there, and of course that's a lot of operational extra trips. But it's very easy to measure that from all of these trips that we, for example, service the festival, music festival, how many customers registered just to do their first trip to go to that festival. Because that number is very, very easy to measure. I will be honest with you, usually we don't get a lot of new customers. I mean, it's 10, 20, 30, 50, these are the magnitudes. There is one trip which is way more profitable and really an incredible success, which is our airport service. So invested a bit of extra money in the Budapest airport to buy a parking lot which is a bit closer to the main terminals than our competitors, for which you need to take a transfer, a minibus for like 7 minutes, and you need to wait 10 minutes for the minibus, and you don't know how many minutes you need to wait for it. It's quite expensive, so at first look it's just barely breaks even, but we had a campaign kind of organized around this airport service to differentiate ourselves to the competitors. And we had an incredible number of new customers signing up just for the airport service. So something like 25% of our airport trips are the first trip of a customer. And there is no other service or concert or anything like that even comes close, and certainly not in the volumes. And this is every month, so it's like a music festival every day at the airport, if you look at the economics behind it. Obviously every city is different. Maybe it's not the airport for you guys, but if you can find these very exciting venues or services, that's an incredible way to attract the customers.
Yeah, and you've got an existing network of travelers looking for options to get to the downtown core. And I would hope that you can keep them engaged, even if it's just for a short business trip. You are now the de facto mobility option for when they're in the city during that trip, or maybe the next time that they're coming back.
Only to add, also, we have the same experience in Madrid. As moving to point A to point B is not so special, and I think it's the most important thing is create this point B, right? Make something special in your service that people is going to take the service because you are offering this place to go, or this special price, for example, because if you are competing with another service like taxis or whatever, I agree absolutely. We are also investing less and less in marketing because of the same reason. It's very difficult for us to create trips. The easy way is to compete for these trips in another way, or creating trips in places we don't have yet in the service. We are doing the same thing right now.
Yeah. Belint, any insights from, because Mall is obviously, you know, you have the parent brand of gas stations. If anyone's not familiar, there's also Mall Bike Share in the city. So you have, again, this oil and gas company that's operating in a variety of different verticals from a mobility perspective. Would you say that you can tap into that existing base of users? Because they are, at the end of the day, they're separate companies. It's not one integrated service.
The answer is that I don't really have hard data. I have intuitions about it, but that's, you know, everybody has an opinion. So we don't have very good scientific data. I believe it is happening, but we have right now no good way of measuring that how much we are leveraging of having this other vertical.
But we were talking beforehand, and there is, to a certain degree, the ability to pass users back and forth between brands that I think there's opportunity in a user that is riding a Mall bike share on a regular basis and pulling them over through any kind of marketing campaign.
So we discussed about this and what we really think. So I always say that for somebody for the first time to register and try car sharing is a huge hurdle. It's a lot of difficult steps in the process. It's incredibly difficult, especially if it's an electric car, and especially if our business model is such that we ask the customer to charge the car. We're basically, if you do this, it's like a triple jump from 20 meters from a rock for a person who cannot swim. I think that's also a bit of a mistake that we did, that we asked too much of the customer. Car sharing already is difficult in itself. Do it in a car which is electric and you don't know how to start it, and then even ask the customer to charge it. I mean, I'm sometimes amazed that we have even some customers who do it. Because this electric charging for different car types, even I use these cars and I forget whether I have the charging port at the back of the car or at the front. So first I reverse into the charging station, then I go out and I reverse back into it, only to find out that the cable is still not long enough to attach to the car. So it's a lot of novelty, and this is where these verticals and the bicycle sharing comes in. If I have a customer who is already comfortable with bicycle sharing, for that person, the learning curve is a little bit less steep because they are already starting from step one and not from step zero. And I think this gradual approach is extremely important, that you gradually take the customer with you and not ask them to go from level zero to level three. So how can you break it down into smaller steps? That's the question.
Right, because it's really the educated user is probably your most valuable user. Right, someone that's comfortable with the service, someone that knows the ins and outs of where to park, where to charge, how to charge, typical range of an electric vehicle, if you have electric vehicles. So on that note, from an acquisition perspective, how refined are you in your acquisition strategy? Are you looking for mass market, trying to acquire as many users as possible, and then guide them through that education journey, or are you really honing in on pre-educated users?
So we really focus on the right information at the right time is the key. Because, you know, when I look through our support articles, there must be hundreds, right, Ben? And so, like, you know, that's a novel for someone to read. And obviously it's a two-way relationship with the customer. Like, you know, we invest in them, they invest in us, and that grows over time, right? Like, you don't marry someone on the first date. At least, I don't. So. I guess maybe some people do on TV. So it is really, like, in-app, we have these little carousels that we push through. You know, I completely agree with the EV side, where, you know, we've got a number of Teslas, number of Polestars on the fleet, and looking at some other models. But, gotta say, like, classic Vita Polo, jump in, short trip as your first introduction. That's quite a bit to get over, and to get through and to get used to. The scooters have been really helpful for us in terms of the education piece, but then giving them a little bit of information as they're going through that journey.
One hurdle at a time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If they're familiar with ICE vehicles, start with ICE vehicles,
yeah,
then transition them into the concept of an electric vehicle.
Yeah, and like a lot of others in the room, the 30-minute, you know, credit to get started gives people time to figure it out.
They don't feel like they're out of pocket just to learn your service.
I think to answer your question whether which customer segments do we focus on, in the beginning we pretty much focus on everybody who had a driver's license. And now comes the question of profitability. You know, we are 4.5 years old. The target for the first 2 years was to launch the business. And profitability is not that important. Just make it happen, get people with a lot of energy. Then came COVID, then the challenge was to survive COVID. And now since a year ago, the challenge is to make it profitable. And that requires different people on the team, different skill sets, a different way of thinking, a different segmentation of your customers. So now we have really starting in October last year, to look at which is our customer segments that are unprofitable and how to have less of those customers. And typically these customers are the customers who are already coming with an idea to play with us, to basically have a fraudulent activity, or just customers who do one trip. So for example, we are strengthening the registration process, and we are, in addition to the driving license, in a couple of weeks we are introducing a photocopy or a scanning of the local resident card. So you must have an address, a registered address in Budapest if you want to become a customer. And with this we are probably excluding 5% of our registration attempts. So somebody, unfortunately, and some of you who are coming to Budapest for a long weekend and want to try it, unless you email me in advance, won't be able to try it. And the reason for that for me to have a customer who comes from another country to visit Budapest for a weekend and may never come again or come 10 years later for another weekend for a conference is not a profitable customer. I will not only that I will never make money on that customer, but I will also not be able to give a very good service experience for that customer, because on that one trip and the long registration process, it's not a good, the value that I give and the time that I take from the customer is not in balance. So I don't want to disappoint those customers.
You say they might be coming for a conference. I think that's very friendly. They might be coming for a bachelor
party. That's more the case. So let them think that, you know, so we don't need to compete with the taxes in every case. And we need to be a bit more selective if you want to be profitable.
Any comments there?
Yeah, well, about these re-educated, pre-educated customers, we hope to have it already on our platform, and if not, we have just to wait to the competitor have one problem on the platform. As we are competing in Madrid 5, we know that people is opening one app if they don't find the car, so it's close enough, they open the next one. So. This is the place we are.
Yep. Okay, great. Well, I think, because I am being mindful of time as well, but I would like to touch a bit on, we've looked at acquisition experiences, diving a bit deeper into actually engaging those users, making loyal members. If anyone's familiar with the 80-20 principle, essentially 80% of the results is going to come from 20% of the causes. It's a general concept that applies across a lot of industries, and I would say it's quite applicable to the mobility market as well. In the concept of 80% of your revenue is going to come from about 20% of your users. Broad strokes, but with that concept in mind, do you agree with that?
90-10.
There we go, a very, very strong balance. So you agree with that logic. Do you treat your power users, let's call them power users, that 10% of members, do you treat them differently? Do you engage with them in different framework versus the other 90%?
We actually find, because we're massively chat-based for customer support, and we actually, instead of having a customer support team, we call them the experience team, and that pretty much everything that touches the people is that team. We find, because the chat's so efficient, but we keep it very personal, so our power users actually tend to be on first-name basis, just over the years as things come up, which is pretty interesting, and building that relationship in, and that's just in how we build the team, and I guess focusing the team on, there's a strong hospitality background in the company, so anticipating our users' needs before they know they have them, and again, that comes back to that principle of the right information at the right time.
Yeah. No, I mean, to take that concept from focusing on your power users, not from just finding ways to keep them loyal, but actually finding ways to provide good support, again, that inherently keeps the cycle going.
I can't echo enough, don't mess it up. You know, that's
that's
where you lose them, is those pain points where something goes wrong. But I would also emphasize the point that when you do get something wrong, you have this opportunity we found to build trust, because you know, if you can find something that goes wrong and go, well, hey, yeah, we own that, but here's how we're going to make it right for you, that the trust with that customer after that is really strong.
It might even be stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any examples from yourselves in engaging power users?
No. So we are not there yet. That it would be the main priority. I wish we could be there one day. We are doing one small thing in that space, in loyalty. We are launching a usage-based reward program in combination with the oil company. So basically, we are leveraging their loyalty program and involving car sharing in that program. So it's basically, if you always go to the same gas station to fill up your car, you get points. Based on how many points you get, it's kind of like the Air Miles, usage-based program, which is encouraging usage of car sharing. Basically, it's almost free for us to join because it's their program. So it would never make the business case for us to develop our own loyalty program. But it would be interesting. We are starting in a few weeks or a few months just to see whether it will bring any additional usage.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, our experience here is not so good. we are having problems. We are not successing on having these programs. We have tried several times, but I think here we have these convenience forces are stronger than our program. So we talk to our customers. At the end of the day, they always ask us to maintain the service, do your job, and I will use your service no matter what. So we do this. We put our efforts in maintain a service in full service always. This is our experience. But if you have any other idea,
okay, that makes sense. All right, don't mess it up. That is the key lesson here. Maybe last question, and then we'll open it up to any questions if they do arise. In dense mobility markets, you know, like you said, you have 4-5 car sharing companies in Madrid. So how do you build that wall around your users? How do you keep them from jumping to an alternative, especially in a dense urban environment where, yes, you have, for example, there's 5 car sharing operators, but there's also transit, there's also taxi, there's also micromobility. Any examples of building loyalty into your service?
Well, first thing is similar to what we have talked before about these new services you can offer. For example, the airport. This is a massive place where everyone needs to go. So you are competing with taxis, with public transport, trains, other car sharings. So open these kind of places is giving you this loyalty, this special customer that only needs this place, and this is the loyalty you can find on this. And this the barriers we can find. Well, you know, we have these PHP cars, and maybe this is our biggest barrier we have with the competitors. Like this, for example, Fleetmove is putting a PHP car also in Madrid, regarding that we were the only one with that, and it was very easy for us to maintain this barrier, right? But, well, we have on our market, on our roadmap, maybe in the future put these EV cars, so we will to find another barrier to put. Small things like this special aid in the application to know this, to open the car, to close the car, to these educational things, but also this off-street parkings. We have open new areas like this metropolitan area of Madrid. If you are the only one in one metropolitan area, you have all the customers in there. Maybe not so much customers to improve profitability in that area, but of course you have all the loyalty in this area. So, well, this kind of measure, maybe you can have this this barrier you need.
I think the key thing for us, and it's probably a bit different from most of us in the room, New Zealand, US, Canada, Australia, highest car ownership rates in the world. BC, probably some of the lowest car ownership rates in North America. But for New Zealand, we really see the private car as the key competition, as I said before. And so when we can get our customers, and we do in mass, both on the business and the consumer side, to sell their vehicles, you really set some cost fallacy, because every trip costs, you know, $4 of petrol, never mind the $50 of depreciation per day that the user has for the vehicle. So once we get that, we unlock this giant value pool, and that's really the key focus. And then it's surprise and delight along the way, and like a real focus on just making sure there's real, tangible, material value for that user. And that, you know, compared to trying to hack loyalty through, kind of, I guess, tricks and
True value and a service, a high level of support, as you had mentioned before.
Yeah, and really, really seeing that that private vehicle component of their thinking, and then once they release that, they can, you know, we often use the analogy like you can't build that, like you wouldn't go to build a house with just one tool. Like if you just have a hammer, that's not going to do the job, right? And we think mobility is the same. So moving much more from, I don't know, if you think of private car ownership as like a monoculture, so you know it's just a field of corn, right? Compared to an ecosystem, so like a rainforest, and then being able to lean on the other providers where appropriate.
Yeah, you said that you focus your messages on the private car. That is very interesting, because maybe we are competing more with public transport in Madrid, but we cannot send these messages on our communication, right? Because local authorities, they don't like that. So we need to talk about private car, but the reality is that most of people that take our cars, well, not most, half of our database has not private car. So when they take our cars, we are taking people from the public transport. But this is a conversation we don't want to have with the local authorities. So we need to talk only about private car.
You tread carefully. Okay. I think we're all good. Do we have any questions from anyone?
Yes. To track all your customer and user, do you have integrate CRM in your Vlog software, or do you follow the customer?
We don't.
No, we don't.
I think we're over 100 fields, is that right, Ben? Per customer that we track? Maybe more? Yeah.
We use Intercom.
Yeah.
So we have that backed in to our app. We have a server-side integration that we've built where we take customer data out of Vlog from the back end and push it up into Intercom. So that's our support team, is all our supports run through Intercom live chat. Yeah.
We do have an emergency phone line, just in case, but I mean, it'd be pretty minuscule compared to the chat point.
100 fields.
In
Come here, explain.
Oh, 100 fields. So 100 unique pieces of information that we track for a customer.
Wow.
So number of trips, where they're, a whole bunch of things. If they've ever taken a particular service type like airport, or which cities they've turned up in, if they prefer anyone, like you name it, we probably know it.
And is it largely intercom that you're using to parse through that data?
Absolutely, yeah.
We use a lot of their products, and we have it in our, because we build our own mobile apps as well, so we have it baked in, and really, it's a huge return on investment for us, because we can do really targeted, you know, we see that you've driven all of our combustion cars, but not any of the electric cars, so we're going to surface material to you in the app by email about EVs, for example. So really, it's just built very customized user flows to really drive that retention, so that people can fully engage with all the different parts.
So the simple answer is right information at the right time. The complex answer, which is behind the scenes, is that level of customer information and insight.
Any other? I really agree with you when you say we need to put on the same level the climate positive and the sharing business. But as sometimes we do it with Velocroot, we charge with solar energy or our puppets 80% of the time. But I don't feel like customer will evaluate really preciously this argument, you know. So how much energy would you put in this carbon neutral business, indicator and stuff like that? And is it really a factor of acquisition or more like a way for the investors and the cities and so on to be like, okay, I'm going with you?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things we've seen, it's usually between number four and number six on the importance as a value proposition. So convenience, cost, quality, the usual things rank above there. That being said, and that's really repeated, you know, in our industry, with our customers, and anywhere else you see it. But we just see it as realistically, I think it's fair to say, we set the company up as an experiment to see if we could take transport as a major section of the economy and use it to drive climate regeneration. Working out so far. So it's just part of who we are as the DNA. And some customers love it, some customers don't know. But you know, if you think about airlines, right, like when you book your flight, you can choose. We're just an opt-in. I mean, we're just like, it's standard, it's not an opt-in, sorry. So every customer, every trip, every time goes through that. So I think it's really just about drawing a line in the sand and defining who you are and sticking to it for us, at least.
Just to push on that topic, what's the impact? It's more, what's the impact of having a petrol brand linked to your shared mobility?
Before I should jump in, leaving these guys on their own. We have a 30% shareholding by New Zealand's largest fuel retailer as well. So
we got three oil and gas players up here.
30%.
I think it's so the customers that we have acquired in the past 5 years are obviously the ones that are okay with it. So we actually don't have a very good knowledge of that, because those customers that have an issue with that are not our customers, and we don't know their opinion very well. I can tell you that when I'm recruiting people in the company, they do have sometimes a concern that, oh yeah, but you guys are owned by this big oil company. And then we have a conversation about our values and how much independence we have and our business targets. And then they can decide for themselves if this is with their values or not with their values.
Yeah, we have just 50%, so we are quite independent. But you know, we are PHB, so most of our customers, they think that we are in this PHB with steel oil because of our soil, but it doesn't have any other.
And on top of that, we are actually, the customers don't know this, but in 1 month, we will be decreasing the number of our electric cars from 30% back to 10%. And for sure that will have some negative implications on our reputation. But what I want to communicate to our owners and our shareholders and customers is that which one is a greener car sharing company the one with electric cars or petrol cars, and the answer is the one which is still alive in 3 years' time. And if you can have a beautiful concept, but if you go bankrupt and close the business, then you're not contributing very much at all.
Yeah, we have always said we're drivetrain agnostic, we're outcome focused, and one of the we lead with our mission, which is to help build more beautiful, livable cities by providing a better alternative to private car ownership. And so we do spend a fair bit of time more in thought leadership and, you know, those sort of media applications compared to marketing, but we do spend a fair bit of time educating both government and private sector that a one-to-one transition from, you know, petrol to electric vehicles is actually not going to solve the problem, and shared has to be unquestionably a part of that solution. So, yeah.
Sustainability not only in the technology but also in the public space.
Yeah, and the usage of the service, for sure. And mobility habits as a whole. Perfect. Yeah, one last question.
I'll come back to client acquisition. So the way I see it, we have the external ones, and then one of the biggest hurdles that we have, for example, is understanding and transferring these incomplete ones to approved. And my question is, did you guys manage to, based on, for example, your 100 points of contact, did you manage to understand better your clients to be able to target them and to improve this rate of conversion? Or is it still something that remains rather small because you have the smaller and then the approved rate to use it?
I think it's one of the classics, and it's kind of like, as I mentioned before, we've got a strong background in hospitality as a company. It's getting the basics right. It's like, you know, when you go out to dinner and someone doesn't top up your water glass? And they're the really hard things to do 99-100% of the time, consistently, without fail. So we really look at it as a, like, if it's not going to work, we want to make sure it's not us. You know, so if someone signs up and we don't see them again, we go back, we check, we email, we call, until they tell us basically to bugger off. You know, and then we're like, okay, that's cool. You do you. But, that's one of the things that we see repeatedly in other industries, as well as some of our testing of other car shares, is they just don't follow up, or if they do, it's really poor. I had one of the competitors in Munich, which is no one here, sent me an email yesterday being like, oh, you've probably never used car sharing like this before. Like, you're right, my one works. So. But definitely no one here.
I'm not sorry. Perfect. All right. Well, I think we're good. Thank you very much for joining us. If you don't mind giving them a round of applause. Last takeaway, just don't screw it up. Perfect. Thank you.
Oh, yes, hi. I'm happy.